It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by New York Lottery. Thanks so much for being with us. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Multiple ways you can interact with us here on the program over the next hour. The phone number, 973-667-1960. You can also follow and interact with us on Twitter. Use hashtag GiantsChat. I'm at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. He is at GiantsWFAN. And as a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network brought to you by Investors Bank on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at Giants.com/podcast. And as I mentioned, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by the new X series of scratch-offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly. So a lot on tap. In terms of today's program, we will get into the franchise tag, because today starts the two-week window for teams to hand over the franchise tag or transition tags to their respective players if they want to restrict their ability to test the market. And also we'll continue our free agent preview, focusing on interior defensive linemen, which clearly impacts the New York Giants. Paul, how's everything on your end?
Good morning, Lance. You're right. Very, very busy day. And then let's not forget what happened yesterday when Governor Murphy in New Jersey started talking about getting percentages of fans back in the buildings, which, even though the NFL season is quite a few months away, that is a very good sign.
Absolutely. I think that's been the trend across the country. But my reaction was identical to what you just said, Paul. I looked at the announcement. I said, well, last time I checked, August is when we'll start to think about a football game. I'm not really worried about how many people they're letting in MetLife Stadium in the end of February. But
no,
yes, it
sure
is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it really is. And I think one thing for sure, you know, all NFL fans really, you know, were dying to get back into games this year. And of course, a number of cities, because of their local restrictions, were able to get into their buildings. I think the Giants fans, whenever they get back into the building to see this team, as Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman have constructed it, are going to be very, very pleased and very excited. And I think the building is going to have a whole new life once those folks get back into their seats.
So that's the layout of the land in terms of what's happening locally. Now let's branch out in terms of the entire league. As I mentioned, today starts the two-week window. So every team has until March 9th, which is two Tuesdays from today, to hand out the tags to one player per team. You can't use the franchise tag and the transition tag. You can use one of them. Now, 15 players were tagged last year. We had 14 franchise tags. We had one transition tag. Only two of the 15 players worked out long-term deals. That was Chris Jones of the Kansas City Chiefs, their defensive lineman, and running back Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans. And one was traded. That was Yannick Ngakoue, who was traded from Jacksonville to Minnesota, and then he ultimately found his way in Baltimore. So high volume of players, Paul, last year were tagged, but very low volume of long-term deals. Now, the Giants, we know, can make a decision in terms of Leonard Williams, Dalvin Tomlinson. They did tag Leonard Williams last year. He played under the tag. And as I mentioned, a lot of players played under the tag throughout the course of the 2020 season. Interestingly, not that this means much of anything, Paul, but I'm throwing it out there as a factual statement. The Giants have never tagged a player, the same player, in consecutive years. JPP
Correct.
Came the closest, but he was tagged twice in the span of 3 years, in 2015 and 2017. Now, that's not to say that they wouldn't do it again, but based on history, since the tags were available, the Giants have never gone down that road.
No, and honestly, they haven't had to, because they were either able to reach a new deal with that person, or they just decided that, you know, things weren't going to work out. And for example, JPP, as you said, they got a new deal with him, and then another year later, they wound up trading him to Tampa Bay. So, no, they have never been in that scenario. And I think one of the reasons is Kevin Abrams, who is the Giants' assistant general manager and who is their cap guru, has done such a good job with structuring contracts. He understands all the idiosyncrasies, and he understands how, when you sit down with an agent and you say, look, I know this is what you need and this is what we need, and there are some mechanisms that we can kind of use to get to a place where both of us can kind of get what we want. Kevin is extremely good. And remember, the Giants brought him in from the NFL, where he was one of the original cap gurus for the league. And that's where the Giants got him from. It's one of the reasons why he is so good at all of the little details that teams can put into a contract to make things work. And so I think there's a lot of value there, and I think the Giants are incredibly fortunate to have Kevin work on those deals.
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's proven his value and then some, and Dave Gettleman will be the first one to tell you that. The other thing that was notable, remember, even when you go back to the media pressers last year when free agency started, Dave Gettleman brought Kevin Abrams into a number of those pressers so that he would provide his perspective, remember, Paul, in terms of the financials and so forth. So, I mean, that alone shows you the influence that he has within the front office as being able to compute those numbers. And that's been a trend, right? I mean, you look across the league, Paul, there's a lot of capologists for every single team. They always have somebody that knows the ins and outs of the franchise tags, the transition tags, all of the nuances of the salary cap, because it really is a science. When you look through all of the rules and regulations, similar to the rule book, where a head coach, it's important to have somebody on staff who understands, hey, what could be reviewed, what you can challenge. Very similar to a front office, having an individual that knows the inside and outside of the rule book when it comes to the finances. So that's where he really has proven his true value.
You know what, Lance, and I know you were not with the Giants broadcast team at the time, but I'm sure you're aware of the story. It was Ernie Accorsi who brought Kevin Abrams into the organization, because Ernie had succeeded George Young after the 97 season from assistant general manager to the promotion of general manager, and George Young went to the league as vice president of football operations. Well, within just a couple of years, it was Ernie who realized that, you know what, I'm not really sharp on this whole salary cap thing, and it's become such an important part of how you make up an organization. We better think about, you know, doing something here that's going to get us up to speed, because we're going to fall behind the curve. So Kevin was part of the NFL's salary cap team, and the Giants basically raided the NFL to take one of their guys because Ernie knew that, hey, we need to be on top of this. And that's where Kevin originally came from, and that's the story of how he got here. So there is nobody in the league around the different franchises who's going to know things better than Kevin, because he was there at the very beginning when the NFL was involved in all of this stuff, and they had to cross-check and double-check every franchise to make sure that everything they were doing was right. I mean, could you find a better guy to bring onto your team? It was a brilliant move by Ernie to do.
And I think it's imperative for every team to follow suit. If I'm a general manager, I would want somebody who has that type of knowledge on my staff, just like I use the parallel with the head coaching position. Now, as far as the decisions that the Giants are going to have to make, at least in the short term here, is whether or not they do want to utilize the tag again. Now, remember, you could place the tag on a player, and that doesn't mean that they're playing on the tag for a second straight year. If they went that route with Leonard Williams, they then have until July 15th to hammer out a long-term contract. So there is a difference. It's important to note this. There's a difference between a player playing under the tag for two straight years versus being tagged two straight years. There's been a lot of players that would fall under each umbrella, and you could be tagged two straight years. That doesn't mean you played under the tag for two straight years. Now, the other element in play here when it comes to the actual finances, Paul, a lot of people are talking about, well, how is the cap, the potential lowering of the cap, going to impact the tags? And my response to a lot of individuals is, remember, the tags are not dependent on what the salary cap is. The tags are based on an average of salaries at that given position. So, for example, the franchise tag is the top five at that respective position, salary-wise, or cap hit-wise, I should say. And then the transition tag is the top 10 players at that respective position. So the reason why I want to bring that up is, even if the cap goes down, you have to determine whether or not you can fit in that average number based on salaries from last season, which has nothing to do with the cap number this year. It's not as if they take, hey, the franchise tag this year is 40% of your cap this year. No, it's based on salaries from the previous year. So it really depends on, are you willing to take that percentage of the number from last year's salaries and apply that to what may be the lowering of the cap this year? That's what every team has to ask themselves.
No, there's no doubt. But at the same time, you can understand why, even though the tagging period begins today, there will be teams that are not going to do anything. In fact, most of them probably won't until the 2 weeks expire. And right near the end of that, the last couple of days of the tagging period, which I believe is March 9th, is it not?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. That's when you're probably going to see a bunch of these tags occur, because honestly, we think the salary cap is going to be somewhere between 180 and 185, but we don't know. And even though that's not the determining factor of what's going to happen, teams do want to put that into their equation as they start to play around and figure out how they want to move forward. Now, I did see ESPN today, and this was quite a large number, and you just quoted the number from last season. They were suggesting that there could be a list of 22 tagged players over the course of the next 2 weeks around the NFL.
Well, once again, it's the security blanket, Paul. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't want to lose a player and then you want to open up the window for negotiations for a long-term deal, tag the player. I mean, granted, yes, it's a placeholder. You're going to have to account for that within your cap, but better to have more leeway in re-signing that guy and working out a long-term deal than taking the chance of absolutely losing them. And remember, there's also the exclusive and the non-exclusive tag, which is whether you want that player to be able to speak to other teams or it's just a closed-off negotiation between you and that player. So that's the other flexibility that teams have. Now, we mentioned Leonard Williams. As we branch out to the defensive lineman position, as far as free agency goes, the two others that the Giants have is Dalvin Tomlinson and Austin Johnson, who was one of their veteran rotational defensive linemen that they brought in. Johnson didn't jump off the page in terms of his statistical numbers, but he proved to be a very valuable veteran. And if the Giants want to re-sign him, I don't think they need to break open the piggy bank. The Tomlinson conversation, I think, is probably the most fascinating of the three. I'd even put him ahead of Leonard Williams, mainly because it's hard right now to determine, Paul, what the rest of the league looks at as the value of Dalvin Tomlinson. Meaning, is somebody willing to really go aggressively after Dalvin Tomlinson, or would you essentially be competing against yourself? I think that really is one of the biggest question marks.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And then you have to throw into this equation, too, how many teams believe that they can find what they need at the interior defensive tackle spot through the draft, because that affects how high you might be willing to go in terms of bidding for a veteran. Dalvin Tomlinson is a terrific player. We all know that. The Giants would love to have him back. I'm sure there are a bunch of teams that would really like to have him on their roster too. But it comes down to, well, how much can you afford given your cap room? And then, okay, let's see now. If we think we can get another defensive tackle in the second or third round or even fourth round, maybe we think that we can fill our needs with one of those guys. And obviously, from an economic perspective, we'll be doing a lot better if we take one in the draft than going out and trying to pry Tomlinson off the Giants roster at what's going to have to be an inflated price. Because let's face it, if Tomlinson doesn't get any huge offers, that increases the chance that the Giants can re-sign him at a reasonable rate.
And in an ideal world, that'd be what they're pulling for. Dalvin Tomlinson's camp is not necessarily pulling for that. But yeah, if there's not much competition, then maybe the Giants can preach patience. And all of a sudden, he comes back into the mix. Very similar to, not identical, but remember Marcus Golden, right? You know, there was a lot of chatter about Golden coming off a very impressive statistical year. Would the market be there for him? And it turned out the market wasn't there. And as a result, he was able to come back. I know the Giants ultimately traded him to the Cardinals, but patience actually proved to be rewarding in that department. Is that one of those scenarios that plays out for Dalvin Tomlinson? Now, if it doesn't, and there is aggressiveness, when you look at the free agent market versus the draft, there are a few attractive players that are in free agency. Some of them, though, have injury bug concerns. Others didn't wow you in terms of sacks. Like, I'll give you an example. I was looking over the list. One guy who I think is a potential player, somebody who still has upside, unfortunately injuries have gotten into his way, is Sheldon Rankins of the New Orleans Saints.
Sure.
Okay. He's a player that was a former first-round pick, Paul. He's got an expiring rookie contract. the Saints, there was a reason why they drafted him high. But the problem is, in each of the last three seasons, he's been sidelined. So the question is, you may look at him as an upside player, but how much money do you want to invest in him? And how much reward can you get out of him? Especially if it's hard to bank on him playing 15 to 16 games. But if you said to yourself, hey, Tomlinson's going to cost a lot more than we anticipated, maybe a guy like Rankins, who is not up there in age, is somebody to at least consider.
No, I would absolutely agree with you. Coming out of school, he had rave reviews, and that's one of the reasons why the Saints went after him hard. But you're right. Up to this point, because of the injury factor, he has been somewhat of a disappointment, and now he's available. And Dominican Sue, I mean, come on. What kind of career has this guy had? But right now, are the Buccaneers in a spot where they can afford to pony up the money to re-sign him? Probably not. But again, you're talking about a guy who has a big question mark on his resume. That would be his age. I mean, this guy has been playing a long, long time.
Yeah, 34 years old, by the way, and he made $8 million last year, just to provide some perspective.
So you're going to be paying a fairly high price for a guy who may not have a lot of gas left in his tank. And Kawan Short's another guy.
Who is just released. Yep.
Right? He's accomplished a lot in his career. But consider, now he's got a double whammy going on him. He's plus 30, or 30 plus, I should say, and he's had injuries. J.J. Watt is another guy who could play defensive tackle or defensive end. Certainly the guy is got, you know, an impeccable resume, but what's he also got? 30 plus on his age list, and as well he's got injuries. So it's like, you know, the thing that favors, if you're in the camp of Tomlinson, he's in his prime. He's been very durable and healthy, and he's been productive.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, and I'm not trying to be funny here, okay, Lance? I'm not trying to proclaim him an all-universe player. But if you are a team looking at the list of free agent interior defensive linemen, can you really find one knock on Dalvin Tomlinson? I can't. He's just really good across the board. He checks every single box except, oh, excuse me, he's not a real dominant pass rusher. But you know what? He does get some push. It's not like he's not existent there. He's good. He's a good player right across the board.
Fundamentally sound player is the way that I would describe Dalvin Tomlinson, meaning you know what you're going to get. You're going to get contributions in a variety of different areas. But yes, to your point, if you sign Dalvin Tomlinson and you think that all of a sudden this is going to be the year where he's going to give you 7 or 8 sacks, I think you're dreaming. He's that 3.5 to 4 sack guy if you really have, you know, high expectations. And let's face it, Paul, if you look at the free agent market right now, and I've got the list in front of me, the player on the interior, okay, we're focusing on defensive tackles. The guy with the most sacks entering the market this year is Ndamukong Suh, who had 6, okay? 6 is the ceiling amongst all of these guys. And there's a number of guys that I would sit here and tell you who meet that age characteristic that you were talking about. For example, Chris Wormley is another guy, 28 years old, okay? But once again, you're not going to go into free agency thinking that this is going to be the year that he's going to have 1 million sacks. Raheem Nunez-Roches, okay, who was a rotational guy who played behind Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea. Very good run stopper, but you're not bringing him in, and he's not going to give you sacks. So you can go after some of these young guys who I think would be good fits for the Giants, but you just got to be realistic that there's nobody on the free agent market who's coming in, and if you lose Leonard Williams, let's say, Paul, that you're going to make up for half of Leonard Williams' loss,
right?
Because you're going to bring in a defensive tackle that's going to give you 6 sacks or something like that.
I agree with you. Hey, can I throw out just one name on the free agent list for defensive tackles? How about Jonathan Hankins? A guy who was really good with the Giants when he was here. In fact, you know, he was the precursor to Tomlinson. And, you know, had a big free agent deal when he signed with the Indianapolis Colts. Then he got cut. Then he went to the Raiders for a few years. He's never quite played to the level that he did when he was with the Giants. In fact, I think you would probably say free agency-wise over the last several years, he's been somewhat of a disappointment. But here's why I bring him up. Because we know when he played for the Giants, not only was he a good guy and very similar to Tomlinson in terms of a good locker room presence, everybody liked him, he was fundamentally sound, he was an energetic player. Again, produced on a higher level when he was with the Giants than when he left. But by the way, You know, he's only 29 years old, believe it or not. That's all. He's only 29. So if you had to replace a Tomlinson because he got such a sweetheart deal somewhere else, would you think about bringing Hankins back into the fold? Probably getting him at a very, very reasonable rate, wouldn't you think?
I don't think that's a bad move, especially I would say if you lose Austin Johnson, Paul, so you lose your veteran backup, I think it makes more sense that Hankins could take that type of a role. I don't know if I would want Hankins to be my every down starter or my reliable early down starter. I would look at him more as that Austin Johnson type of role if you went down that road.
Now, Austin Johnson himself might even expand his role if he signs.
Possible.
Remember, with the Giants last year, he barely played even a quarter of the snaps. He was a rotational player, but I also think that, you know, he showed he's got some value there. I'd like the Giants to re-sign Johnson, and I would not be against him competing. For example, if they brought in a Hankins, you tell a Hankins and a Johnson, hey, fellas, we got you on a reasonable rate, but go for it. Between the two of you, fight it out. See who deserves more snaps. I'd have no problem with that.
One other guy that I want to throw out in terms of free agency, Antoine Woods, who's been with the Cowboys. He's coming off a season-ending injury, 28 years old. I think he's been a nice bright spot for Dallas. Once again, you got to look at the health. Not a guy that was costing a boatload of money, so he would be somebody also. And this is one, again, if the Giants wind up losing some of these guys in free agency, you bring back Tomlinson and Leonard Williams, the necessity to then aggressively pursue a defensive tackle in free agency, I don't think is important. One other guy who we didn't bring up, DJ Jones of the San Francisco 49ers, 26 mm-hmm. years old, okay? Now, once again, this is a guy that's probably going to want some money now as he enters free agency, because here's what happens with San Francisco. They drafted so many guys. He got more playing time. He actually had 3 sacks this season, 20 tackles. You know, coming off a very productive year, is this the year that he now gets his payday after he was playing behind some of those other individuals? But there are some young guys. It's just, once again, I think expectations need to be kept in check. Now, as far as the draft group, I don't know about you, Paul. Now, there are certainly players that you can, I think, get at the second and third round, maybe even later on. I just don't look at this class as an overwhelming class where somebody's going to come in and make a significant impact in year one. We've had a few guys that opted out that did not play, and then a few guys that I don't think necessarily played their best football in 2020.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that. I think there is some second-day depth and maybe even third-day depth at the position where you can get guys who have make-it grades who can be on a 53-man roster, but I'm with you. I don't think there's just a plug-and-play guy after you get after Barmore out of Alabama, who I think we all believe is going to be a first-round pick. After that, to be frank with you, you know, there's nobody on his level. There is a significant drop-off. But there are guys who are going to be, I think, significant role players who are going to be taken in the second and third rounds. And it depends on what role you want them to fill and whether or not they've got that particular talent. In other words, there are guys in this draft who are going to be, I think, pretty good three-technique defensive tackles in a 4-3. There's a bunch of those guys, but that doesn't really help the Giants, does it? Because if they lose a Dalvin Tomlinson, they need a plugger. They need a plugger in a 3-4. They don't need necessarily a 3-technique and a 4-3 because that's your penetrator and your pass rusher. And if they re-sign Leonard Williams, well, that's his spot. So that won't do you any good. So I'll give you a good example, all right? As I was going through this, I had a guy written down. And if you want a potential draftee for the Giants, who if Tomlinson were to get away, okay, there's a guy here that I had listed. Where is he now? Where is he? Tyler Shelvin from LSU. Okay? Now, what is this guy? He's 6'3", 362 pounds. He is going to be a plugger. He is a run stopper. He is another Snacks Harrison. He can't be moved. He's literally a mountain of a man. You're going to need cases of dynamite to blow a hole through the tackles if you're going to run against this guy. That's how unbelievably big and stout and sturdy and an anchor that he is. So now, but here's the problem. That's all he is. He's a run stopper.
And he opted out, by the way. He did not play this season.
Correct. He's one of several opt-outs at the position this past college football season. So this is a guy who, if you need that plugger, you need that Snacks Harrison, and you're not going to take him in the first round. You're probably not going to take him in the second round. He's probably a consideration once you get to the third or fourth round, okay? If you don't want that style of player, you don't even have him on your board. He's listed with a grade, but you have him as a guy who he's not going to fit what we want to do, so we don't want him. You need a guy, if you want to take him, Shelvin, you want to take him if you need a first and second down run-stuffing, stopping plugger in the interior of your line. And if the Giants were to lose Tomlinson, I could see them being interested in him at some point in the draft.
We'll get into a few other names as we move along here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, brought to you by the new X Series of scratch-offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly. And limited Giant season tickets are on sale now for the 2021 season. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seats starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925, or you can visit giants.com/tickets for more information. Also, don't miss out on your chance to experience a premier hospitality experience watching Giants games and world-class concerts in 2021 as a Giants suite partner. Limited full-season locations are available, or place a deposit for individual games. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/suites for more information. Let's open up the phone lines at 973-667-1960, and we start things off with Joe in Pennsylvania. What's happening, Joe?
Hey, hi, guys.
Hi.
Just listen to you talking about these tackles, and that it just brings back to me the defensive tackles, you know, defensive ends, you know. I guess it's all about the money. Somehow we had to leave JPP go. I understand his hand, and it was a big money thing at the time, and we were going younger. Then we left Vernon go, you know. We got Zeitler back, and Zeitler, at least for him. Then we left Golden go. Just for a sixth-round pick. What did Golden, did he get a new contract with Arizona?
No, he's going to be a free agent.
Oh, he's a free agent again. I guess it's just the money. We can't come up. And then, like with the linemen, you know, defensive linemen, where we had to leave Joseph going at. And we have a quarterback on a rookie quarterback, and I look around the league here, and I see, you know, quarterbacks with big salaries, and, you know, they have all kind of weapons and whatnot. I just can't understand it there somewhat there. I guess that's the way it goes there.
It's all timing, Joe, to be honest with you. Because of the rules and the regulations and the way the salary cap is constructed and the way free agency is constructed, timing has a lot to do with these circumstances.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what's the other problem? The other problem is you come up in a particular year where you have certain positions that need filling, and, oh, sorry, but that year the draft is weak in that spot. And, oh, sorry, there are no free agents that can help you in that spot. A lot of it just happens to be circumstances, and I know a lot of people don't want to believe that. They just want to point fingers and blame things on people, but sometimes it literally is the luck of the draw that year and what happens to be available on the shelf.
I guess I remember that year. I still couldn't believe it. We brought in three big players there, Harrison. Who were the other two with them? I forget.
Janoris Jenkins and Olivier Vernon.
And Vernon, yeah.
Yeah, that was 2016. So. But remember, then as a result of all of those contracts, you then had to clean that up. And that's exactly why they couldn't keep a number of the players you mentioned.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yep. Well, at least we gave it a shot. Well, one other thing there, I did mention to John, it's been 2 weeks, and I was hearing this sales guy going to be our offensive lineman coach. What do you think is the holdup here now? You know, everybody's, you can talk to everybody. Do you know anything about this?
Well, I think the Giants are just perhaps still finalizing things, and when everything's finalized, they'll make a formal announcement, which is no different than pretty much how things have played out in the past.
Yeah, you'll remember, too, Joe, last year when the Giants brought in Joe Judge and then he needed to hire a new staff, the Giants, because of Joe Judge's policy, he said, I'm going to announce all of my staff members together when everything is completed. So even though they had already signed deals with some of the assistants, Joe didn't want to put all the names out there until everything was done with every single position. So whether or not this particular coach that you're talking about for the O-line is signed or not, you're not going to get that name until Joe decides that he wants to put all the names out there for whatever changes or decisions that he wants to make. And he's got that right.
And that's a trend, Paul, what I would add to what you said across the NFL, because if you noticed, Nick Sirianni and the Eagles, they announced their entire staff simultaneously. He didn't just pick every other day to announce a guy. Urban Meyer, he announced his entire Jaguar staff on one day. So even when you have an established coach, I know the Giants didn't necessarily make a new staff change, but even if there's some tweaks, most teams just wait for everything to be done, and then they issue it out publicly all at once.
There you go.
I hope they do, because I did hear a lot that he's a good young line coach, and he was an offensive coordinator too, so he must be knowing what he's doing, and I would think he could tell you he had some eyes on a lot of college players, you know, that he might be able to help out there with this. So thanks for taking my call.
All right, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. And remember, it's no different than a number of individuals that Joe Judge brought on staff last year who had ties to college and they weren't that far removed. Yeah, I mean, it always helps when you have relationships, because maybe you recruited some of those players, or you have relationships with the head coaches that are still at the collegiate level who you then can lean on for advice. But at the end of the day, it's a very small community, Paul, as I like to say. So every staff in the National Football League, somebody on that staff has ties to various college programs. I don't necessarily think one team has a significant advantage over the other. I think relationships are important, but the Giants already have plenty of individuals on staff who are not that far removed from college. So if they did want to get some extra intel on a player, they could probably pick up the phone and speak to that head coach directly.
Yeah, and it's not a bad thing either that their strongest connections are to the SEC. Which is the best football conference. Yes, the best football conference in the country.
There's no doubt about that. I don't think anybody would complain if you know a lot of people within SEC schools. Giants fans, get a New York Giants checking account from Investors Bank with a Giants-branded debit card. Security features and discounts at the Giants online shop. You can earn up to $250 when you open an account at investorsbank.com/Giants, member FDIC. And the New York Giants at Quest Diagnostics want our fans to come back stronger than ever. Now you can order your own lab test through Quest Direct to get the health answers you need most. 973-667-1960 is the telephone number. You could also directly interact with the two of us on Twitter. I'm at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. He is at Giants W-F-A-N. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Len in Columbia, Maryland. What's happening, Len?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. What's on your mind?
Let's talk defensive line, since that's where we started the show. But I'd love to have Tomlinson back. So would everybody else. Tomlinson and Williams back. So would everybody else. I think the bad news in all this is it's probably going to turn out to be $30 million for the two of them, which is probably going to be about 1/6 of your total cap space. Jeez, that's a lot. I don't know if you can, you know, overload that way. But he's a terrific ball player. Now The good news is, in terms of trying to re-sign him, and I think you may have suggested that this was the case earlier, you know, there's about half the teams in the league who are not going to be interested. He doesn't play the right position for them. I mean, the guy has really made his bread and butter has really been at nose tackle. Not that he wasn't a decent 4-3 defensive lineman, you know, defensive tackle, but I'm not sure you'll spend the kind of money on him if that's where you're going to play him. But I think as a nose tackle, you know, you're down to 15 or 16 teams. some of those guys already have people who play nose tackle for them. Maybe not as good as Dalvin, but maybe good enough in terms of the way their whole defense is. So I don't think we're competing against 32 teams, 16 teams. It may be when you get down to it, it's going to be four or five or six teams who are maybe interested in Dalvin. And to me,
all
that's,
it takes is one. So if
yeah,
one
that's
team
right.
is really interested, it really doesn't matter
one.
The number.
It only
when
takes
at the end
one,
of the
but I don't want to compete against 32. Because
I understand that,
know,
but
I
if one team is enamored by him, it doesn't matter what the other 31 are thinking.
I'm sorry.
They're willing to pay.
You know, let me tell you this, Len. The one thing that you can't underestimate here is because of the specialization of that's gone on in the NFL over the last several years. There are many coaches and many coordinators who are very happy with using massive substitutions. Now, a guy like Tomlinson, I think, you know, what did he play? 60-something percent of the snaps for the Giants last year, Lance? Is that fair?
I'll look up the exact snap count. Okay. I think that's
I bet you it was, right? About two-thirds of the snaps.
Right.
So, for the most part, he is a three-down player, or at least more often than not.
Yes.
And
yes.
The Giants, right? And the Giants' rotation is just because they like to give guys a little bit of a spell.
Yes.
They're not taking him off the field because they don't think he's good enough. They're taking him off the field to keep him fresh. Now, that's how the Giants view him.
Yes.
Maybe there are a bunch of teams in the league that say, you know what, we don't think his push in the pocket really warrants him being a three-down player. Maybe we think he's more of just a two-down player. Well, those teams are certainly not going to be willing to throw out the financial resources to compete
Agreed.
To try to
Agreed.
Steal him.
I agree with
Tomlinson,
that.
By the way, 60% of the snaps he played in 2020. And then if you look throughout his career, it's been between 53% to 60%. So
yeah.
It's been fairly consistent all four
And
years.
I think more of that is just to give them a rotation more than it is like, oh, he can't play three downs. And I think the Giants, during his career, he has shown more and more that he can play three downs, at least in my opinion. Earlier in his career, maybe not so much.
Now that's a tough position to play three downs at, but I agree with that in terms of what his age is. I was always disappointed when he came off the field, and I liked Johnson. I don't see Johnson as a guy who's going to take Tomlinson's place, but as a rotational nose tackle, I think Johnson did just fine for us as long as it's only 12 to 15 plays a game.
Yeah. And remember, Coach Chaos or Coach Spence is the defensive line coach here, and he had him at Penn State, and he's the
yes.
reason that Johnson signed here in the first place.
Yes.
So I have no problem with bringing him back and letting him compete and earn more snaps if he deserves it.
No, I have no problem bringing Johnson back. I just don't think he's a starter. I just can't go there with Johnson. To put it in other words, there's a reason why he's not still at Houston, and I don't think it has to do with money. I just think they thought they could do better at nose tackle.
Probably.
Than Johnson.
But again, with Coach Spence, having at him again, what happens during camp, we'll see. But
yes.
don't necessarily cap his value or his ability, because I think that Coach Spence is the one guy who can bring out the best in him.
Yeah. Let me just, if I can, go back to Tomlinson. Perhaps make a couple of predictions, which Lance is probably not going to agree with here, but he's going to a 3-4 defense team. He's not going to a 4-3 team. He's going to a 3-4 defensive. And the less competition we have for Tomlinson in that open market with fewer teams, I'm all over that. I want fewer teams competing for him. The other thing I'll say, and here's my fearless forecast, and then I'll let you guys go, and thank you for taking my call. If he hits the open market, guys, if he hits the open market, he's gone in less than 48 hours. That's my prediction. Hey, thanks for taking my call. We'll talk again later. Thank you.
All right, Len. I sort of feel as if those two statements contradict one another. If there's not going to be much competition for him, and that's a good thing, then how is he going to all of a sudden be gone within 48 hours? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to digest that when it's all said and done. But
yeah.
I don't get caught up in how much interest there is for a player. I know we started off the conversation, Paul, where I posed the question, just in general sense, how much interest will there be for Dalvin Tomlinson, or are the Giants pretty much in the lead where they value him more than any other team? I think from a big picture perspective, that's a fair question. But at
sure.
the end of the day, to the last caller's point, Paul, if there's five teams interested in him, if there's eight teams interested in him, we're going crazy over such minute details, because all it takes is if one team is wowed by him and they have a certain percentage of their cap and they say, here, Dalvin, here's 17 bags of money, take it, then that's all that matters at the end of the day. It doesn't matter if you're competing against five other teams. All it takes is one team that values him equal, if not more, than the New York Giants, period.
You're 100% correct. Look, we've gone through this so many times before with quality defensive tackles in the Giants' locker room. It goes back to Cornelius Griffin and Barry Cofield and then Jonathan Hankins. And now maybe Davlin Tomlinson. We're not sure if it's going to go that way. But, you know, the Giants in the last, what's it, 20 years now, 15 years, they have allowed three quality defensive tackles to go elsewhere for a very rich payday. Now, to be honest with you, Linval Joseph, I'm sorry, there's four. Linval, can I forget about Linval Joseph?
Got probably huge the most notable
money.
One, yeah.
No question. Got huge money from the Vikings and went to some Pro Bowls with them, by the way. Okay? Terrific player. Joseph is probably the only one, though, of those other four who actually excelled after he left the Giants. The other three guys, they didn't amount to what the Giants thought they were going to be. For some reason, when they went to their new teams, they just didn't necessarily fulfill the numbers in their new contract. And I'd say they probably were somewhat disappointing after they left the Giants. That's not to say that they would have been that way had they stayed with the Giants, because they certainly were good players for Big Blue. But Joseph is the only one of those other four who actually excelled and went beyond, I think, what some people's expectations were, because he became a really dominant player with the Vikes.
Minnesota's not complaining, and then, of course, he went to the Chargers. But remember, I think what's interesting about those scenarios, specifically Linval Joseph, and I get it, the draft comes after free agency, Paul, so a lot can happen between them, and there's no guarantee that the guy you're eyeing in the draft is going to be there when you select. But I think part of the philosophy that the Giants had with Linval Joseph is, hey, we like that class of players on the interior. We believe that even though Linval's a really good player, we believe that we can then get a player on a rookie contract who could come in, be impactful, and then save ourselves some extra cap space to address other areas of need. Which really goes back to your initial point, which is when it comes to the salary cap, you can't keep everybody. You have to determine where does the free agent class match up with the draft in any given year, and where are you most comfortable designating the amount of percentage of your cap. So I don't know what the Giants think of this year's defensive tackle class, but if they feel as if, hey, you know what, there's a few guys in the draft that we have our eyes on, we think we could get one of them, then you can understand them maybe moving on from a proven veteran. If they don't feel good about the draft, then that's more of a reason why you invest in who you already have on the team.
No, I don't think there's any doubt. And by the way, just as a matter of happenstance, we're talking about Linval Joseph. You know, again, we're talking about another player who's in his 30s, all right, 33, as I just looked up his bio. It's not out of the question he could wind up being a cap hit with the Chargers if they decided that they needed some money. So, you know, he could be back.
And a new coaching staff, by the way, remember, too.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not telling you necessarily that you bring him back, but this is another name from the past, and you know, I don't know what his status is going to be come another month or so, because, you know, he is at this moment an $11.5 million cap hit for a Chargers team that probably would like to get some of that back.
So from your commentary on Jonathan Hankins and Linval Joseph, as we're going back into the archives on apparently today's show, your philosophy is once a Giant, always a Giant. That's what basically you're preaching. So what you're saying is it's never too late for somebody to return to the organization.
Well, you remember Barry Cofield came back.
The Giants were decimated by
injuries a couple of years ago, and he came back for a cup of coffee at the very end of his career.
So, Paul, would you also endorse Will Beattie's return with Charlie? Is that what you're saying?
Different position.
Hello?
Different position. But the point being, you know, that the Giants have always done very, very well with the defensive tackle position. And as much as I don't want Tomlinson to go anywhere else, let me make that very clear. I think all of us on this program think that the Giants would be best served if they could get both guys to stay. I mean, I don't think anybody would dispute that, correct?
No disagreement.
Okay. At the same time, if Tomlinson does escape, are there some palatable solutions for the Giants to fill those snaps? And I think, you know, just trying to be reasonable and logical and looking at potential veteran answers or, again, answers in the draft, I think it would be a lot easier for them to replace those snaps than Leonard Williams' snaps if he should get away.
Yeah. Well, based on what we were talking about earlier in terms of the sack production, and by the way, there's no guarantee that Leonard Williams, even if he comes back, not to say that he's not capable, but I don't think you can assume he's going to duplicate 2020's production all over again when he had a career year, okay? I think perspective's important, but given his upside and his skill set, yes, I think it's much easier to replace Dalvin Tomlinson versus what Leonard Williams provides. Absolutely, yeah. On the same page with you there.
And I'm going to go on record as saying I think Leonard Williams, as long as the Giants do provide somebody next to him who is capable, and if it's not Tomlinson, somebody else who's capable of giving them similar production, I'm going to go right out now on a limb and say Leonard Williams will have a very similar season to what he had this past year. I think he has just now reached his prime. I think Coach Spence has done a world of good for him. I think the offseason that he spent with Richard Seymour during this last summer was a tremendous boost to his career, and I think this is more the real Leonard Williams as opposed to the one you saw with the Jets. So I'm not expecting a tremendous amount of drop-off.
Well, if the Giants feel that way, it's more of a reason why you would give him the tag if you can't get a deal done to at least protect yourself with negotiating rights and then lock him up before July 15th. If that's how they feel and they believe, to your point, he's scratching the surface, then that's a player absolutely worth investing in. There's no doubt about that. By the way, on the topic of once a Giant, always a Giant, Hakeem Nicks also enters that label too, if you remember. He came back as we're reminiscing, okay?
Yes!
Well, John brought up Will Beatty, so this I have to go
true.
To other positions too.
He did.
So there you go.
He did. He did. Good guy, by the way, Hakeem.
Absolutely.
And the
great
Giants
guy.
badly miss him because he was the last of the great contested throw catchers that the Giants have had on their roster.
It's unfortunate that, you know, the knees just didn't cooperate with respect to
Hakeem
Nicks. Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by the new X Series of Scratch-Offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. 973-667-1960. That is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. Duke in Queens joins us. What's happening, Duke?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi.
Thanks for making it.
I want to talk about the D-line, and then I have an O-line question. I, along with you guys, think that we're going to bring back Leonard Williams, and I would love for us to bring back both, but I don't think we're going to bring back Dalvin Tomlinson. And I was thinking, like, maybe we put Dexter Lawrence at nose and then put somebody else at the D-tackle spot to replace where he was, because I know that Dexter Lawrence, one of his appeals coming out of college, that he moved all along the D-line and at Clemson. And so maybe that's an option we can take. I know we also signed Breland Speaks, who was the Chiefs' second-round pick a few years back, I think in 2018. Maybe he gets a starting spot. I think when you look at the group of guys that we have on the roster as it pertains to the D-line, I think we have a really good group, Austin Johnson as well. I think he's a good player. Like Lynn said, I don't think he's a starter, but he's good. He's a good rotation guy. I think we have a good group, and so if Dalvin had to go, I would love for us to franchise tag him and then trade him and, you know, wish him well. If we had to, I still do hope we bring back both guys, but it just doesn't seem likely.
Let me ask you a question while you pose that hypothetical. Do you think that you would be doing a disservice to the defense, especially Dexter Lawrence, if you did move him inside to nose tackle, given the fact that he does such a terrific job setting the edge against the run while he's on the outside position of that line? How much do you value that, and how much would you miss it?
That's a good question. Wow. I do value it a lot. I think he was a big part of why our run defense was so good for the entire season, it felt like. You know, that's one of those things you have to work through and see. And if you're asking me today, because I don't know who the replacement will be if Dalvin is moved, if we move on from him. Because it depends. Honestly, the true answer for me is it depends on who we get. If the person that we get, I don't think can play nose tackle anywhere near Dalvin, then I would move Dexter inside and try to find somebody else to set the edge. And if we get somebody that is sort of close or similar to a Dalvin Tomlinson, then I'll definitely – because I think if you move Dexter inside to nose, I think that is doing a slight disservice. But at the same time, it's almost like you're trying to Band-Aid a wound that's there that, you know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we would have moved on – okay, let's say we do move on from Dalvin because no one knows. But I don't think we would have moved on had this whole pandemic thing occurred. I don't. I think we would have re-signed both. But that's just me. So since this has occurred, that's what you got to kind of do.
I think, and we offered you some options in terms of veteran names in free agency, and I mentioned somebody in the draft, and I do think there are other defensive tackles in the draft who also could fit that bill. I still believe that it's easier to replace Tomlinson than not only Williams, but I also think it's easier to replace Tomlinson than it would be to move Lawrence inside and replacing Dexter on the outside. I'm that's just my opinion. But I look,
okay,
whatever they do is what they do, and if they can find somebody to get the job done, more power to them.
If you
exactly
can bring in a veteran in free agency that could take Dexter Lawrence's position on the outside, and then you can move Dexter on the inside, I think I'd be comfortable going down that.
It's going to be hard to find, though, Lance.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I guess what I'm saying is if you want to put somebody on the outside to replace Dexter Lawrence, you're not necessarily looking for a guy that's just a sack guy. You're looking for a guy,
right,
to your point, that is going to be able to set the edge and help stop the run. So that, I think, is a little bit easier to pull off, Paul, than if you're going for a typical defensive edge rusher to get after the quarterback. Those, to me, are two different things.
That guy, too, doesn't only have to be able to handle the edge for the run, he's also got to be able to command enough respect that he draws a bunch of double teams.
Sure.
Which,
yeah,
is what Dexter does right now on that side of the line. And don't forget how much that also helps Leonard Williams.
Goes hand in hand. It's the old story, just like when you have great interior pass rushers, guys that can collapse the pocket, it does wonders for the guys on the edge and vice versa.
See, caller, this is why being a general manager in the National Football League is one big headache.
Exactly. And so I have another question about the O-line. I happen to believe that Nick Gates is a better guard than he is a center, although I did think he played, he did a good job considering it was his first time at center. But I still do think he's a really good guard. And so I was sort of thinking, like, well, how about we draft a center if somebody lands to us in the second, let's say, the second round? How about we draft a center and then move Nick Gates back to guard? Because, and I ask this and I say that because I don't believe in Will Hernandez, quite frankly, and I don't believe in Shane Lemieux. And I thought that the fact that Shane Lemieux took away a bunch of snaps, even pre-COVID for Hernandez, was a big sign for how the team thinks of him, I suppose. And I was just thinking that since, if both are not the answer next year, I would love to move Nick Gates back to guard, left guard, and then draft the center and then have the center start. And I just wanted to know you guys' thoughts on that. Thank you very much.
I do appreciate the phone call. The sense that I get, first of all, is that I think they feel pretty good about Nick Gates just in terms of the outlook of the franchise, Paul. So I would be surprised if, you know, they want to continue to experiment with him. I think all things considered, I think if anything, they want to see him build upon the transition that he made this year as opposed to now all of a sudden say, all right, you went through X amount of games at center, now we're going to move you to guard. I know he's been a versatile guy, so I'd be surprised if that happens. I'm also operating under, Zeidler is still under contract. I get it, everybody wants to speculate, but if I'm looking at the roster as it stands right now, I don't have to make a decision on Zeidler because he's under contract. So if you want to talk about, well, you have the other guard position that you need to answer between Hernandez and Lemieux, well, you could see how that plays out as a competition. I just don't want to play so much musical chairs after they're trying to now provide some stability on the line. How many more years do you want to undergo taking guys in-house and just moving them around? I think there's got to be a point where you have to build off of what a player did 1 year as opposed to now experiment all over again.
I don't want to just discount his suggestion out of hand, but I agree with you. I believe that the Giants settled on Gates at the center position with the thinking that long-term he is the answer there. And I think he showed them enough in his first year at center that they still believe that that's the case. So I would be very hesitant to move him. Having said that, I do think there are definitely some make-it 53 guards in this draft, especially on the second day, where if you feel like, for whatever reason, that Lemieux and Hernandez are not your cup of coffee, there are guys you could look at. And to be honest, too, there are probably some early fourth rounders on the third day who actually project they'll need some work. They may not be immediate plug-and-play guys, but if you think long-term that you want to pick up another guard, you could get one in this draft.
And I think that's a fine game plan, especially since, as I mentioned, based on the fact that Hernandez didn't reclaim his starting job after dealing with COVID, and Shane Lemieux had shown some flashes, but I think he's far from a finished product that you absolutely know what you're getting out of him. So if they feel, hey, there's another good guard, and this guy's high on our board, and you want to bring him in, and he has the potential to push those two guys, or remember, Hernandez was drafted a few years ago, so his rookie contract is nearing the end of the line, then that makes complete sense. And same thing if they want to go the route of drafting another tackle. If they want to bring in more competition for Matt Paird and they don't bring back Cam Fleming, who's a free agent, it's far from a finished product, okay? On the outside,
sure.
I just look at Nick Gates as more of a guy that they see potential in, that you want to see more of at his position that he played in 2020, as opposed to toying with that center spot.
Yeah, I'm with you, and there's nothing wrong with enhancing the depth on your offensive line by taking another guy in this draft.
Because and not that you wish injuries on anybody, Paul, but whenever we give our preview and outlook of a team and you look at the roster, whether it's now, whether it's us having a conversation in August, I can't tell you going into the season whether the 11 starters on each side of the ball are going to all play 15 games. I can't tell you that. And I'm not saying that you're hoping for anybody to miss games, but since you don't know that, and in all likelihood, Paul, somebody out of the 11 on defense, somebody out of the 11 on offense is going to miss time. It's just that's the nature of the beast in the NFL. If you go into your season feeling good about the 22 guys you have, you're in trouble because you're going to have to get to the 23rd, you're going to have to get to the 31st, and you may have to get to the 42nd guy. So you need to feel good about the second tier at most of your key positions. If you don't, then it's going to come back to bite you, and your productivity is going to drop, and that could be the difference between winning and losing a few games that keeps you out of contention.
The one thing that I have to add here, Lance, and it kind of like ruffles my feathers a little bit, and that is when people talk about the offensive line, yes, the Giants had issues with the line this year because they had young guys playing a lot of snaps, and they had new faces in there. Well, it seems to me we know that Thomas is on his way up with a bullet. I mean, this guy really, really progressed during the second half of the season, and he will be in his second year. You have every right logically to anticipate he's going to be a better player in year two than he was in year one. You have every right to believe that Nick Gates is going to be a better player in year two than he was in year one when he had never played center before. I believe you have every right to believe that Kevin Zeitler is what he is. I don't expect him to get better at this stage of his career, but I don't necessarily think that he's so old that he's necessarily going to fall off the face of the earth and quickly decline. I think you have a right to expect something very close to what he was last year because of his age. He's not long in the tooth. And I think you have every right to believe that Paird is going to improve. We knew he was a raw piece of clay. He was a project. He was supposed to be redshirted as a rookie. So this is a guy. So, I mean, when you look at it, okay, And let's go to the Lemieux and Hernandez, okay? Hernandez certainly had a disappointing season. Also, he was struck with COVID. We don't know right now exactly what Will Hernandez's trajectory is or his downfall is. We're not sure. He's a wait-and-see guy, and I believe he's a question mark. But I also believe that Shane Lemieux, again, first year, what, fifth-round pick, was he, from Oregon?
Yep.
And the people who want to slam him, he's a terrific run blocker. The people who want to slam him and say, well, his pass protection wasn't great. Well, what did you expect? He's a fifth-round pick coming out of a program that was a smash-mouth, in-your-face kind of program, okay? Gets here, doesn't get to start right away, gets injected into the lineup, has to go through two separate offensive line coaches. Is it any wonder that his, quote, grade by some of these analytics people wasn't so very high? What I know is he passed the eye test. He did a lot of good things, okay? I know that they believe he's an ascending player, and there's every reason to expect that he will improve off whatever cockamamie grade some person gave him this past season. So let's understand all of that before we stand here and say, you know, oh, they've got to dramatically improve this offensive line because it hasn't been improved in the last 2 years. That's a bunch of bull.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is, once again, a lot of these young players that you just outlined and that I talked about earlier, they're far from finished products, meaning
exactly.
You can't walk away if you're the Giants after 2020, Paul, and say, we know what we had out of Shane Lemieux. We know what we have out of Matt Paird. So therefore, if they feel as if there's some options in the draft that they want to pursue, I don't think there's anything wrong about bringing in added depth and competition for some of these new faces to maybe push these guys who did get playing time last year for potential starting jobs. And
totally agree. Agree with you, Lance. But there are some narratives out there that suggest, oh, the Giants' offensive line is still a mess and in shambles. I disagree with that. I think they need to draft depth or acquire depth and perhaps potentially a little bit of competition. I don't think it's any worse than that.
Well, to your point, if you thought Shane Lemieux was going to come in midseason and be a Pro Bowler, then I don't think you're living in reality. So,
correct.
I mean, I think you got to once again have the proper perspective where the player was drafted and the conditions and expectations. And here's the thing. If Hernandez doesn't get COVID, and once again, I know I'm going down a hypothetical road. I don't know. Does Lemieux even get as much time down the stretch as he did? Because remember, the coronavirus opened the door for Shane Lemieux to be inserted, Paul. We can't
correct.
Overlook that.
No, there's no question. I mean, again, he was supposed to be a red shirt, much like Parrott was supposed to be a red shirt. These guys were both pushed into the lineup quickly because of various circumstances and the fact, Parrott, because he deserved it. He showed enough during practice and camp that they said, you know what, let's get this guy some snaps and some reps because he looks like he's a real comer. So they accelerated his curve a little bit, and he'll be so much better off in year two because of the snaps and experience he had as a rookie. That is just a huge plus for him and for the Giants. And as far as Shane Lemieux, same situation. Now, it wasn't because he necessarily earned those as much as because COVID hit Will Hernandez, but then he was like a pit bull holding on to that spot and making sure he continued to get those snaps and reps. And he will be a better player in year two because of his experience in year number one. Anybody who doesn't think that is just being naive.
So that is going to wrap up Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate everybody for tuning in as we will continue to once again focus on a different position every day as we get you set for the start of free agency. A reminder that Big Blue Kickoff Live is presented by the new X Series of Scratch-Offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly. And as we close up shop, also, a reminder, you can find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network brought to you by Investors Bank on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcast. Paul, enjoy the conversation. We will speak later on this week.
Fun program.
Absolutely. So we'll be back up and running with Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live as John Schmelke and myself will take you through the conversation tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Stay locked to giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We are signing off. Have a good one.